Are you the sort of person who likes challenges? 2 weeks ago in Victoria, a thing called Tough Mudder Challenge was brought to Australia. It's reputedly the most difficult challenge in the world, set up by British Special Forces. Now members of the public can take part in this 20-kilometre obstacle course. Lots of mud, as you could expect with Tough Mudder. Lots of barbed wire, log carrying, scaling 3-metre walls, crawling through water-filled pipes, running in the gauntlet of electrified tentacles. It's a tough challenge. About 10,000 Aussies took up the challenge of Tough Mudder 2 weeks ago in Victoria. Some were wearing wedding dresses, some dressed up in tennis costumes. Only 8,000 finished. 2,000 dropped out. But if 10,000 were up for that challenge, that means 22 million of us didn't take the challenge. I gather it's coming to Western Australia in about 4 weeks' time if you're up for challenges. Over the last few weeks while I've been here with you looking at Philippians, we've seen that Paul lays in front of the Philippian Christians, this young church in Philippi, the challenge of living lives worthy of the gospel of Jesus. Chapter 1, verse 27, is really the topic sentence of the book. Whatever happens to me, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. That is, worthy of the Jesus who left heaven, became one of us, and died on a cross for us. And that means a united striving, working together, struggling together for the faith of that gospel in a world, in a city, in a neighbourhood, that by and large doesn't care less about Jesus, putting effort and energy into the cause of the gospel, not frightened or silenced by opposition or apathy, but together as a team player in a common purpose. And he urges us to do that with true humility in chapter 2, verses 3 to 8. Humility towards one another, humility towards the outsiders, putting the interests of others before our own. Not just self-effacing, but genuinely humble. And the benchmark for humility is not Paris Hilton. It's not even Dr. Peter Stair. It's Jesus Christ himself, who left everything, all that he had for eternity with the Father, became one of us and died on a cross in total humiliation for us. That's the benchmark. How are you going? How did yesterday go? Did you strive for the faith of the gospel? Did you put the interests of others before yours on every occasion? I certainly didn't. I wish I could say I did, but I didn't. How's the humility going? I must admit, sometimes I get a little win with the humility. And then I feel so proud of myself, it all goes out the window. In chapter 2:14, he continues the challenge. Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Can you imagine life without complaining? It's almost impossible, isn't it? It's the social glue that holds Australians together. What do we do when we have a barbecue? What do we do when we sit over coffee? What do we do when we ring our friends? We complain, don't we? It's just part of our nature to do that, it seems. One of the radio stations a few years ago started a thing called a gripe session, where you could ring in and gripe about whatever you wanted to gripe about. They allocated 10 minutes in the morning radio session. It only took a week for that to extend to 30 minutes. We like griping. We got so much to gripe about, to complain about. It helps us feel better about ourselves. It gets things off our chest. And we see friends and ask how we're going, and one of the common responses is, oh, can't complain, and then we do. About politics, about the weather, about the football scores, about everything. And he says in verse 15 of chapter 2, shine like stars as you hold firmly to the word of life. Our purity and love for God to be so clear in a corrupt society that we stand out. I suspect one of the reasons we don't not so keen on purity is because we will stand out if we're pure, as different, as naive. Genuine purity is not clean clothes on the outside, just put over our dirtiness, but a purity of heart and mind that comes from the inside out. How's that going? And in the second half of chapter 2, Paul writes up two sort of heroes of the faith, Timothy and Epaphroditus, and he sings their praises. And he does it in the same sort of categories he's talked about of Jesus. See there in chapter 2, verse 20, I have no one like Timothy who will show genuine concern for your welfare. For everyone looks to their own interests, not those of Jesus. But you know that Timothy has proved himself because as a son with his father, he served with me in the work of the gospel. He's been a co-worker in the cause of the gospel. He's put the interests of others before his own. Timothy has been what Paul's been talking about, what he's urging the Philippians to be, urging us to be. Or Epaphroditus, get this incredible insight into what it's like to do that in verse 26. He longs for all of you, and he's distressed because you heard he was ill. Did you get that? The Philippians heard that Epaphroditus was ill. They were distressed for Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus then was stressed that they were stressed about him. That's genuine love, isn't it? More concern that he's causing concern for others than his own situation, his own illness, even though he almost lost his life in the cause of Jesus. How do you react to these sort of heroes of the faith? I occasionally read biographies of some of the great Christians, and I feel such a pygmy beside them. Wesley, who'd get up at 5 a.m. to pray before every day of preaching the gospel. I read those biographies and I think they really were heroes, but I'm nothing like it. How do you react to those challenges that God puts in front of us? Because they're like huge mountains, aren't they? They're like some sort of mountain peak to try and climb, towering over us. I feel like I've got such a long way to go. And I think for myself, I sort of react in one of two ways. Sometimes I feel like Superman. Now the challenge comes and I say, yeah, I'm up for that. I can do it. And I want to go for it and look for a telephone booth to change into my Christian Superman costume because I'm going to do it. Other days, I look at the challenge, I realise what God is calling me to be and do, and I think, it's too hard. I'll just stay the sort of Clark Kent, not the Superman, or the mild-mannered reporter. I can never really change. I'll just try and not stuff up too much. Behave okay. Superman, Clark Kent, life is sort of like an oscillation between the two, I think for many of us. We go to maybe a really helpful and challenging Bible study and we're up for it. We're the Superman. The next day when we can't deliver, it's hopeless. We're Clark Kent. We can't do it. Then we go to a conference for a weekend and it's so fantastic and the fellowship is good and the teaching is really encouraging and yeah, we're up for it again. And then cold, hard reality of our spouse or our family or our kids or our parents hits home and we think, no, I can't do this. It seems hopeless. Till the next inspiration. Well, can we make progress? Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 and 13 are a fantastic couple of verses that help us understand how progress is made in the challenge. Chapter 2, verses 12 and 13. It's got two parts to it. Verse 12 and then verse 13, funnily enough. Verse 12, therefore, my dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. That's us, what we are to do. Verse 13, it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose, God's part. And we need to look at both of these to understand how we make progress in the Christian life, because real progress is possible. And we need both halves of this. We need both verse 12 and verse 13. In verse 12, the Apostle Paul urges the Philippians and us to work out our salvation. Now, we can misunderstand this easily. We can think, not so much working out, but working for your salvation. But it's a different idea. He doesn't say work for your salvation. You cannot work for your salvation. Your salvation, the salvation from sin and evil, from condemnation and hell, is something that God does for you in Jesus. It's 100% God, 0% us. You cannot work for your salvation. But when you are saved, you can work out your salvation, work out the implications of already being saved. But you've got to get the horse and cart around the right way. You can't work for your salvation. You can only work out your salvation. It comes after you have been saved. And work out here does not mean figure out, as if it's some difficult puzzle, Sudoku or something like that. It doesn't have that sense of try and nut it out, as if our salvation is difficult to understand or difficult to figure out somehow. Now, what it's talking about is working out the implications in your behaviour of being saved already. Translate into action your new status as a forgiven child of God. Because God's purpose in saving you, if you're saved, is not to leave you selfish, proud, complaining, but to transform you, to make you like Christ. And so he's urging them to carry on this transformation to its completion, and to do it with fear and trembling, to do it with real seriousness, because this is God's will for your life. This is not just a hobby on the side. This is life itself. There are two things that come out of this verse that are very important for us to grasp. The first one is that working out our salvation is active, not passive. We are to work at it, put energy and thought into working out salvation. It's a common mistake among some Christians to think that it's primarily passive. It could be expressed as something like this. What you need to do is let go and let God. You're trying too hard. Stop trying. Just relax. God will do it. He'll change you. It comes in different sort of forms. I can remember as a young Christian, I went on a camp one weekend and I was encouraged to make a full surrender to God. And what they meant by a full surrender was to examine every part of my life, every corner and skerrick of my life, every aspect of my life, and to identify the parts of my life that I hadn't surrendered to the Lordship of Jesus. Now, it's a good thing to do. I wasn't against that at all. But what was promised to me was if I could just surrender every part of my life, suddenly the Christian life would be easy. I would be able to live the victorious Christian life. God would just empower me from then on to live a life in which I no longer struggled with sin. And I tried it. And again. And again. And it didn't work. There is no quick fix like that. And what Paul says to the Philippians is continue to work out your salvation. Be active in it. Sustained, strenuous effort. It requires hard work on our part. It's not an easy ride where it's all done for me. No, I need to work at it. It's active, not passive, and it's ongoing, not instant. The NIV, I think, has the translation right. Continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Now, instant sanctification, instant transformation is very attractive for us, I think. It's attractive partly because that's the reality of becoming a Christian. It's instant. All I needed to do to be accepted by God, fully, completely accepted forever, was turn from my sin to live for Jesus, to confess my sin and put my trust in Jesus. And in that instant, I was transferred out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of his Son. Now, whether you can identify the point in time that's happened for you or you can't, if you have put your trust in Jesus, you have been transferred. You have been saved. It's instantaneous. And it's tempting to think that if that happens instantaneously, then transformation happens instantaneously as well. Maybe there's another leap I need to take, an action I could take that transforms me from a sinful to a non-sinful, from a selfish to a non-selfish, to a loving person in one instant. And I'll tell you what, if somebody offers me a way to be instantly transformed, instantly sanctified, I'm interested. Of course, I do struggle with sin, don't you? I wish I could be unselfish. I wish I could put the interests of others before my own consistently, day after day after day. And if somebody comes along and says, Tim, you're struggling, aren't you? You're finding it hard, aren't you? I say, yeah. And if they say, well, here's a way where it won't be a struggle anymore, where instantaneously you can overcome all that sinfulness, I'm for it. I'm a sucker. I want it. In fact, you'd have to be a pagan not to want it, wouldn't you? But Paul says there's no such thing. Continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. And over the years in Christian circles, there's been all sorts of offers of instant sanctification. Full surrender, I've talked about already. The baptism of the Spirit, the fullness of the Spirit, Toronto blessing, whatever it might be, it promises to make you a super Christian overnight, instantaneously. But it's never delivered. And it never will. There's a new one I've noticed about every 10 years or so. Another one will probably come next year. A new offer of instant sanctification. But it's not the way God does it. Keep working out your salvation. There's a process of growing more and more like Christ. Little leaps, little bits of progress, yes, but it's ongoing. So don't get sucked in by the latest offer. And don't be discouraged when it's not instant. Continue to labour at changing, says God. But that could be misunderstood. You could think, well, that means it's all up to me. I'm wholly and solely responsible for my transformation. And either I can do it or I can't do it. We need verse 13 as well. And Paul puts them side by side. Verse 12, you work. Verse 13, God is at work. It is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good pleasure. God is at work to change you. That is, change is not independent of God. I'm tempted to think that I can do it myself, powered by my own determination, powered by my positive thinking. If I decide to do it, I can do it. I grew up with one of the stories that my parents read me when I was a little boy, was The Train That Could. Some of you might know that story, about a little steam train that had to go up a hill. The challenge was to get up the hill. And the train said to itself, I think I can, I think I can, I think I... If I think I can do it, I can do it. But God, Paul, will have none of that. It's not independent. If there's going to be any real change, God must be at work. How do you change a selfish person into an unselfish person? It's like changing a dog into a cat. You just can't do it. It's like changing an engineer like I was into an artist. It just doesn't work. See, it's not that the heart is willing and the flesh is weak. The heart doesn't want to change. I need God at work to bring any real change. I'm dependent on God to be at work for genuine change to happen. And Paul assures us that God is at work in us to change our will and our actions. Not at work on us as if it's some outside pressure, but in us, from inside, the Holy Spirit transforming our hearts and minds to change us. But how does God work? What part of us does God work on? Which me is he changing? Is it my will and then God's energy to strengthen me to do my will? Now look at verse 13 again. God is at work in you to will and to act. God is at work from the internal motivation, from whether I want to do it to the outward action. If tomorrow you wake up in the morning and you have a strong desire to tell others about Christ and his salvation tomorrow, praying for opportunities that you might be able to explain Jesus to your friends, to your family, how's that happened? Is it just that you've decided to be better? Is it just your desire and will? No, God has been at work in you. Some people think that our wills are sacrosanct. Our wills are sort of quarantined away from the action of God. God only works outside that. God wouldn't interfere in our will. But we need God to interfere in our will. If God doesn't change my will, I'm not changed. I'm just the same old me with a bit of veneer over the top. No, I need God to work from the very heart, my will, to the outside, my action. And Paul is saying God does it from the will to the action, all the way through who I am and what I do. And if that's true, one of the implications is you probably won't feel God at work. So it's not that I want to do this, but God forces me almost against my will to do something else. No, God is at work at the very depth of me in my own will and heart so that I want to do it. How do I know God is at work then? Well, often I only know in retrospect. I see that I've started to change, that what I wanted before is not what I wanted anymore. And I now want things I didn't want before. We see it in progress. God is at work, he says, to will and to act. So we're not on our own. It's not the power of positive thinking that will get us there. The critical word is actually the word that verse 13 starts with. The word for, because. Work out your salvation because God is at work in you, both to will and to work. Work at being different because God is already at work. It's both together. Us working, God working. Who's responsible for our transformation? Well, for salvation, it's 100% God. But in sanctification, transformation, it's 100% God and 100% me. You say that's bad maths? I just say it's good theology. But we've got to get the order right. We work at it because God is already at work. There's not that God helps those who help themselves. It's the other way around. God is already helping us. His Holy Spirit is at work in his people to produce love and joy and patience and humility. And so let's cooperate. Let's work at it as well because God is at work. If God was not at work, it would be a hopeless task. The challenge would just be too much, too high. I can't change, not really. But God is at work. And so change is happening. It isn't hopeless. We can rise to the challenge. We can be changed to live lives worthy of Jesus. The New Testament is optimistic that real change will happen in God's people because God is at work in us. And how powerful is God? Can he turn cats into dogs? Can he change selfish, self-centered people into loving people? Can he change proud people into humble people? He sure can, can't he? He's God. That's his business. That's what he works at. So if you are a Christian, he is at work in you. Have you seen the effects of that? Because if he's at work in you, you will see the effects. Look back over 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. You will see that you've changed, that God has been at work to enable you to want to and actually live a life more worthy of the gospel of Jesus. Trust him to keep working. Ask him to keep working. And because God is at work, he encourages us to work as well, deciding to put the interests of others before our own, to work at not complaining and whinging, instead being grateful and thankful for all God's blessings to us, looking for opportunities to commend Jesus to friends, to colleagues, to family. And you know what? If God is at work in you, you'll find that as you try to change, as you work out your salvation, it won't just be some sort of veneer. It won't just be an external show, but the heart is unchanged. It won't just be fake. You will actually be changed from the inside out. Are you up for the challenge? Sometimes as you look down the barrel of life, the challenge to become more like Christ, to live a life worthy of the gospel, does just feel too hard, doesn't it? That's often how I feel. Please be encouraged. God is at work in you. So don't give up seeking to be changed. Don't stop putting energy into changing. But because God is at work in you, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Let's pray. Father, may our love abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that we may be able to discern what is best and be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruits of righteousness that come through Jesus Christ, to your glory and praise. Amen.
Show his heart to bless the ones with love.